This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky in for Ira Flatow. Tim Jennison is an inventor. In the 90s, he invented something called the video toaster for desktop video production. He's built flying machines, he's fixed arcade games, even engineered a radio-controlled robot. Tim likes puzzles and theories. He had a theory that wouldn't leave him alone, though. It had to do with the Dutch master painter Johannes Vermeer.
It's possible that Vermeer was using technology to make these beautiful paintings. If he did that, and of course there's no documentation that he did this,
it's possible he could paint some pretty remarkable pictures without a lot of training.
A blasphemy, you say? Well, Tim wasn't content to think Vermeer might have used technology to paint. He wanted to test out his theory, so he painted his own Vermeer. The new documentary Tim's Vermeer shows how he did it. The movie's directed by Teller, the silent half of the magic duo Penn and Teller. We hope he's not going to be silent today because we've got him on the line from Las Vegas. Teller, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello, John. There's no glaciers out here, by the way.
No glaciers in Vegas right now. Also here to talk about this experiment is Tim Jennison himself. He joins us from San Antonio, Texas. No glaciers there either, Tim, right?
Let me check. Nope. Thanks, John.
Welcome to the show. So, Tim, first of all, this project started because you had an idea, like a lot of us do, in a bathtub. What was the idea?
Well, the idea was that Vermeer was not only tracing the shapes with optics, but he was tracing the color. And if you can trace both the shape and the color and match those colors exactly, you're basically making a handmade photograph. So if my idea was right, we're seeing color photographs more or less from 350 years ago.
Now, one of the things about Vermeer that you talk about in the movie that's very important is he's not just tracing shapes, he's tracing colors, but unlike a lot of the painters of the time, he wasn't drawing first on the canvas and then painting over it. He was just painting. This is important, right?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of unusual things about Vermeer. You know, you can see in some of the paintings, you can see that foreground objects seem to be kind of out of focus. People have been remarking about the sort of photographic nature of the Vermeers, you know, since the late 1800s. So, yeah, there is something about them. And when you see them in a museum, they just sort of pop off the wall. They look like they don't belong there.
And they pop off the wall because of his use of light. Light is different in a Vermeer painting than in most other paintings. So why, Tim, is this such a challenge to recreate the actual quality of the light in a Vermeer?
Well, a lot of people who have looked at optics used by artists assume that they had used something called a camera obscura, which is a dark room with a lens in one side, and projects, the lens projects onto the far wall, whatever is outside the room. And, you know, we know that artists after Vermeer were using camera obscura. And you can trace shapes quite easily in a camera obscura because it's kind of like having a slide projector or a video projector pointed at a white wall. You can go up and with a pencil and you can trace things. And, of course, that'll help you get the right perspective in your painting. But if you try to paint on that color image, most people intuitively think that would work, but it does not work. Let's say that something, there's an apple, and it's projecting this red apple on the wall. You go in with some red paint, and you start painting on that apple. Well, it gets to be a very dark red at that point when you apply more red paint, and you don't know if you've got the right shade of red. You have to turn on the lights to see what you're doing, so it does not help you do that at all.
We're talking with Tim Jennison. He's an inventor. He's a video technician, and he's also the subject of this very interesting new documentary called Tim's Vermeer, which was directed by Teller, one half of the magician duo Penn and Teller. If you have questions about Vermeer or about this amazing way in which Tim decided to recreate a Vermeer, you can call us at 844-724-8255. Again, our phone number is 844-724-8255. So, Teller, what got you interested in this project? What made you think that Tim could actually do this?
He demonstrated to me how this gizmo of his enabled him to make a perfect copy of a photograph, and that was the start of the whole project. When I saw that, which Penn, by the way, brought to me, because Penn's kind of the instigator on this whole business, I was amazed because it's a principle that we use in magic. Using a 45-degree angle mirror is something that you see in magic. Whenever you see a large box on stage and it looks empty, and then they close up the box and suddenly they open the box and a bunch of showgirls step out, they were probably hiding behind some 45-degree angle mirrors. So this immediately clicked with me as a magic principle. It's partly that my parents are both painters, and Penn and I have both known Tim for a very, very long time, and we know that Tim is not a faker.
He's not a faker, but you know, your parents were both painters. Coming from a background where you know something about this, did you have questions about the way Vermeer may or may not have created these photorealistic masterpieces so long ago?
I certainly did once we got started on this project, and this project turned into a science education for me, because we had to learn not just the optical principles, and keep in mind that optics were very, very big in Holland at the time that Vermeer was doing all this work. If you were an amateur, scientist, you probably got yourself a telescope, because lenses and mirrors were getting very, very good. I've lost the question. What was the question again?
Well, I wasn't sure if you felt, as someone who I'm sure admires Vermeer's, whether or not it seemed obvious that he must have used a contraption like this, or many other art lovers just assumed that he was guided by the hand of God to paint these beautiful things.
Well, one of the things that we really learned about was in studying this, we learned that the human retina just doesn't do the job that it would need to do to make a painting like the kinds of paintings Vermeer made. The human retina is made for, it functions very practically. If we're out on a big snowy plain and a big bear is coming towards us, we pay attention to the bear and we can recognize the bear. But our eyes are not really built to measure tiny, tiny nuances of brightness in the snow around us. And the phenomenon is called the center surround phenomenon, if you want to look it up. And there's a wonderful book by Margaret Livingstone from Harvard called Vision and Art, which has a very detailed chapter on this. It's very hard to explain in a few sentences. But the gist of it is to make the kind of painting with the kind of photographic accuracy that Vermeer did, you must have an optical aid of some kind, because the human eye can't do it by itself.
Okay, Tim, so take us through how this machine exactly works. Walk us through setting it up and how you used it.
Well, my first experiment was, like Teller said, was copying a photograph. It was a black and white photograph. It was my father-in-law's high school graduation picture that just happened to be sitting in the kitchen when I tried this experiment at the kitchen table. So I had this idea that you could use a mirror to match the colors, in other words, to trace the colors to get that photographic quality. So imagine I put this photograph, propped it up vertically on the kitchen table, so it's standing up straight. Then I laid my painting surface down just in front of it. And then I put a 45-degree angle mirror, a very small mirror, a couple inches across, on a stick, so that it was out in the middle between the photograph and my soon-to-be painting. So when you look straight down, you see a reflection of the photograph. And when you look just over the edge of the mirror, you see the panel that you're going to paint on. So I take some paint and I make a guess at the right shade of gray, because this is a black and white photograph. I mix up some gray paint and put a dab in the middle of the panel. And I look down through the mirror and I can see what shade it's supposed to be in the mirror, because I'm seeing the photograph reflected. So right at the edge of the mirror, you can do this very accurate comparison between these two shades, something the eye is not good at. If you look at something and then turn away and look at something else, you can't remember. Your eye can't remember the absolute shade. But if they're just right there at the edge of the mirror, they're together, just like holding two paint chips together at the hardware store. Mm-hmm. Your eye is very, very good at matching that. So that's the fundamental device that I call the comparator mirror. And then that allowed me to make that photograph, and that was a demonstration that it was practical and that it worked. I mean, I'd never painted before. That was my first oil painting, and it looked exactly like the photograph of my father-in-law, and I go, whoa, this is that worked way too well. So I got on the internet and started searching. I go, certainly somebody has has discovered this and searched and searched for weeks and searched in other languages, and apparently it really has been forgotten for 350 years. Now, there may be some artist today using this method and just not talking about it, because artists do that sometimes. So then to paint a Vermeer, I had to expand the device a little bit, because now I'm not painting from a flat photograph. I'm painting from an actual room. So I built this full-scale model of Vermeer's room with the harpsichord, the chair, all the window frames, very distinctive architecture in his room. There's a viola da gamba and a Turkish carpet, and two people in this room. And so I had to make a device that could see that room and allow me to look through this little 45-degree mirror and copy that. And that's I had to add a lens and a curved mirror to the basic comparator mirror to make that work. And it's very frustrating work. You're basically seeing a small amount of the room at any given time through these mirrors. And the worst part is I'm leaning over this painting, looking straight down, and it just kills your back. That was the worst problem.
Well, it's one of the hardest parts of watching this movie is watching you painstakingly have to recreate this. But I think one of the most fascinating things, Teller, to me, is watching Tim build this room. He's not just building a room with stuff from IKEA. He's building his own furniture. He's grinding his own lenses. He's making his own paint.
What he's doing is he's making a genuine time machine. Because as a scientifically minded guy, Tim wasn't content just to get ordinary objects and work with ordinary modern things. He needed to know that he could work under the exact conditions that Vermeer was working under. So he did a tremendous amount of research, went to museums in Holland, photographed furniture in great detail so that the furniture that he was painting would be exactly the furniture that Vermeer had painted. And he took all this information back, and because he's a technologist, and one of the things that his company does is 3D rendering, he rendered all of this in detail and then fed it into computerized machines that carved the furniture just the same way. He went shopping at Christie's to find the exact carpet that Vermeer had, but just so that no one would be able to look at it afterwards and say, well, you know, if you'd really been using the paints Vermeer had been using, you couldn't have done this. Or if you'd really been using the lenses that Vermeer had been using, you couldn't have done this. Tim actually sat there and ground his own lens so that his lens wouldn't be of modern quality, but would be of the quality that Vermeer had to work with. So he made his own time machine, and it's a fabulous. It took you about a year, right, Tim, to do that?
Yeah, to build the room and the camera. Yeah.
Yeah, so this project, speaking of glaciers, this project has moved at about that pace, but we fortunately are able to compress it into a lively 80 minutes.
I'm John Dankosky, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Let's get to some phone calls. People want to join the conversation. Tim is calling from New York. Hi, Tim.
Oh, yeah, hi. Firstly, Tim, it sounds as though you've done an incredible amount of work to recreate a sort of authenticity in the studio of Vermeer. I'm actually an artist, an oil painter, and I trained in the traditional method of oil painting and studied art history technically for many years. I just wanted to say something that's very, very important for people to understand, which is that artists in the 17th century were trained in a very, 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 very thorough, a very different way than artists are trained today. So the way of building a painting in layers with certain techniques was different than the way we understand a painting by looking at it from the surface after it's completed. Do you know what I mean? When you look at a painting, what you're seeing is the effects of light passing through color over many layers of color, bouncing off a white background and coming back out to you. And so when you're looking at a painting, recreating the surface is not enough. You have to actually, and I'm not saying what you did is not enough. What I'm saying is take into account the technique of layering, making a layered structure in paint. Contemporary to Vermeer was Rembrandt, who was also painting directly onto canvas without drawing first, but there's no evidence that he used that he used any technical devices to get his perspective in his drawing.
He didn't use any sort of a machine like this. So, Tim, thank you for the phone call. Our other Tim Jennison, what do you have to say?
Well, I had to learn quite a bit about art history before I started this, and I know what Tim's talking about. There is a body of study about painters that would build up layers, starting with an underpainting, which would be typically, it could be a black and white picture, didn't have to be, and then they would layer paint on top of that, and sometimes they would use colored glazes, and the layers would show below this semi-transparent glaze. And a lot of people thought that was a kind of a secret of how the Dutch masters in the Golden Age got their lustrous look. I looked into that quite a bit, and there really isn't much evidence that Vermeer glazed at all or that you see anything below the surface of his paint. They are opaque paints. There are just a few spots where Vermeer did use glaze. But by and large, they're just opaque paint on a canvas. Now, Rembrandt, where Vermeer was making these extremely detailed geometric objects, like the harpsichord with its intricate decoration, which was actually a printed paper that was applied to the harpsichord, you know, you would expect these complex things, like he painted maps that are extremely geometrically accurate. You would expect to have some sort of evidence if you x-ray a Vermeer as to how he constructed that, but you really don't see much at all in the way of a line drawing underneath the Vermeers. Very, very seldom do you see a line under his paint. Rembrandt was painting a lot of people, and nothing as technical as what Vermeer was doing usually. And so Rembrandt, you can practically see the way Rembrandt works. He's mm-hmm. working very fast and very quick brush strokes.
The movie is Tim's Vermeer, and we're talking with Tim Jennison, who created his own Vermeer, and it makes your hand cramp up just watching him paint the detail on that harpsichord. We also have on the line with us Teller, who directed this film. When we come back, we'll take some more of your phone calls talking about art and science here on Science Friday. This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking this hour about the documentary Tim's Vermeer. It's the story of one very obsessed man, Tim Jennison, who painted his own Vermeer with a little help from some lenses and mirrors. We're talking with Tim Jennison and also with Teller, one half of the magic duo Penn and Teller. Teller directed this film. We're going to get to some phone calls. KK is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, KK.
Hi. So my thing is that I've heard about this whole Vermeer and these lights and stuff. But you know what? There are people who have extraordinary talent who can, in fact, paint photographically, such as the Saturday Evening Post guy, Norman Rockwell. And there are people who write great poetry and are brilliant, like Shakespeare. There are people who write great, you know, sonatas like Mozart. And so I think all this is well and good, but how do you get those colors just so? I mean, yeah, you can maybe make the people look realistic, but even to get the colors, you have to have real talent and understanding of color, how it works and everything to make that work. Well, so that's what I have to say.
KK, it's a really good point. So, Tim, I'll ask you to respond first.
Well, in fact, Norman Rockwell did use a projector called a Baloptikon. He writes about it in Rockwell on Rockwell. He says, I use the Baloptikon. I'm not proud of it. I don't talk about it much, but it saves so much time. Shakespeare, great. No question there. And Vermeer's pictures are amazing. And Vermeer was right in the middle of the Dutch Golden Age, you know, millions of pictures made at that time in Holland, literally. And they're all beautiful, by and large. You don't need this to paint. But Vermeer is different, as I said before. There is something about them that a kid brings in a picture that he drew, and you say, hey, did you lay this over the top of the coloring book while you were drawing it? Yes. You know, you can tell it's traced. And I saw something like that in the Vermeer. And if you look at the white wall at the back of the Vermeers, this is something that's particularly puzzling because of the way Vermeer painted the shading on the white wall from almost pure white near the window on the left to almost black in the lower right corner down in the shadows. And you don't, your eye doesn't see it that way. When we see a white wall, even though it's got a dramatic shading across it and a difference in lighting, we tend to see it as white. And that's, you know, we know that shadows are there, but we don't see them accurately. Mm-hmm. Our retina is actually removing that information before it gets to your brain. That's what Teller was talking about, the center surround behavior of the retina. So, you know, as far as how color works, understanding how color works, you know, I had to put the right color on that Vermeer painting, you know, my Vermeer, and you really don't have to know much about color. If you're looking in the mirror, you put, you know, you make a stab at the right color, you put it on the panel, and you look through the mirror, and usually you're a mile off. It's nowhere near the right color, and the mirror just guides you to the right color. Yeah, you'll say, oh, this is too bright. Okay, mix in some black. Okay, now it looks not, you know, it needs to be more greenish. You know, I'll mix in some green, whatever. It's a very intuitive process, and if Kiki would try it, or KK is her name, it would try it, I'm sure, you know, she would find it interesting.
Well,
and I'm anxious to see what people do with this.
KK might also want to do a little reading. Because this is Tim didn't come up with this entirely out of whole cloth. She might, for example, want to pick up David Hockney's book from about 10 years ago called Secret Knowledge, in which he brings forth a great deal of evidence that artists were using these optics, or Philip Stedman's fantastic book called Vermeer's Camera, in which Stedman demonstrates with geometry that in six of the Vermeer paintings, there is clear evidence that he was using a lens in a camera obscura. So this is, you know, yes, it's nice to have an opinion, but she should probably inform that opinion.
But I think another thing that maybe KK and some of the other people who are listening might be thinking about is this bigger question, Teller, that I know that you're trying to get at with this, is that if we say that Vermeer used these mechanical techniques, that he was maybe as much a technician as he was a traditional artist, some may feel as though that takes away from the great art, but you seem to be making the case that a great artist can be all of these things and be a scientist as well.
Absolutely. The idea of art is to get something that's beautiful in your heart across to another human being. And how you manage to do that is really irrelevant. This is not a football game. We don't have rules. There's nothing that's out of bounds. What gets that image into from your mind into the viewer's mind is anything is fair game. And most artists, I think, that you talk to are very delighted and relaxed when they hear about this possibility on Vermeer, because they themselves are trying to make that wonderful transition happen.
Tim, before I let you go, just the last thing. There's a moving moment at which you unveil in the film this painting that you painted somewhat painstakingly over the course of quite a number of years, and there's quite a bit of emotion behind that. Can you just tell me about the feeling of completing something that was such an enormous undertaking for you on so many levels?
Well, yeah. It was the last day of painting. I'd put the final coat of varnish on. And the varnish totally changed the look of the painting, because as the paint dries, it changes color. So you just have to ignore that while you're painting. But the day I put the varnish on, all those colors went back to the proper color that I saw when the paint was wet. And it was a pretty dramatic transformation that the painting went through. So that's one thing I was looking at. But Farley, the producer, just before that scene, asked me if I had just stood and contemplated the project and the finished painting, and that's when that happened. A few sniffles came, and I guess, you know, what was going through my head was, you know, just the enormous amount of work and you know, the gratification that I felt after, you know, hitting my goal. That was nice, but also I was just responding, I think, to Vermeer's beauty. And the fact that I had, my own hand had brought Vermeer's vision back across 350 years.
Well, your own hand and a lot of work and some interesting technology. We've run out of time. I'd like to thank my guest, Tim Jennison, an inventor and founder of the software company New Tech. He's the star of the documentary Tim's Vermeer. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you, John.
Thanks also to Teller, one half of the magic duo Penn and Teller. He directed Tim's Vermeer, which is in theaters now. Thank you so much, Teller.
Thanks a lot.